Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 338.
This week on the podcast, Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar win New Hampshire by coming in second and third.
And Sanders manages only first place in both New Hampshire and most national polls. Is first place's ceiling? We'll investigate.
Plus, Nevada hopes to relieve Iowa of the pressure of being the only incompetent caucus state in the country.
And if you don't like putting kids in cages, Michael Bloomberg can't be on the table.
Telemundo's accidental quiz show proves that only annoying overachievers know who's running Mexico right now.
And hey, maybe you missed the Saturday Night Massacre last week. That's because it was on Tuesday.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Follow us on Instagram.
Sure.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yep.
And I'll tell you why to do this. Because we are on our storm-chasing tour of the caucuses.
Yeah.
And this weekend, we are going to be in Nevada.
Yeah.
Where we hope to, unfortunately, bring you some more exciting breaking news about incompetent caucus sites operating terribly.
Yeah.
We'll have some news about that later in the podcast, but if you want to see every step of our exciting adventure,
yeah,
definitely follow us on social media. We will be posting about it probably too much, and you will enjoy every moment
That's
of
right.
it.
Yeah.
But this weekend, we had our first primary of the year.
Yes, first primary.
New Hampshire voted on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Voted the same day as...
This week, not weekend.
Right. That's right. they voted the same day as a huge Department of Justice scandal that we're going to talk about at the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
It was quite a day. Less drama than Iowa because we did find out the results of the New Hampshire primary.
Yeah, primaries, much easier to count.
So much easier.
They're just votes.
They just literally count the number of people that voted and then they add it up. Although we still had the same problem that we always had. Or always have, where Sanders and Buttigieg were close.
Yep.
Towards the end, Buttigieg kind of caught up to Sanders. My parents left their watch party at that moment, called me and said, and left me this message that was like, we had to leave because we couldn't handle being disappointed again. We're going to be walking home if you want to call us. And I was just like, I'm going to let this play out because
right.
I don't have time.
I was texting you because I was at rehearsal in a panic because it kept getting closer because when I left work, he was ahead by like 6 points. And then it was just like,
right. Then it was down
happening?
To less than two. And then we all had to panic a little bit.
Yeah.
By the time that my parents made it home, he had won. So everything worked out fine.
Yeah.
And then they were just like, oh, great, he won. And I was like, you did this to me in 2018. You did this to me in Iowa. We've been doing this every election.
Oh, yeah. They go early gloom and doom.
Yes. My parents are like heavy into early disappointment. They lean into it. They turn off the results. And then they cry to themselves for 2 hours while the rest of the nation watches the race evolve. And then later I have to call them and be like, no, everything worked out. It's okay. And even though, like in 2018,
I
specifically warned them that would be the case. I was like, FYI, especially when you start
getting
to
2018, remember that first race that was in Kentucky that was supposed to be some sort of like bellwether or something and the Democrats
and
lost
the Democrats
terribly
lost
and everybody was like one race out of like, you know, every single congressional race in the country and everybody's like, oh, no, well.
It's over.
Yeah.
So, and then what?
We didn't
then
do it.
Also, all of these states that had these huge Democratic pickups had mail-in voting and so it took them like 2 weeks to tabulate the results. So I said to my parents, like, calm down because we are not going to find out who wins California tonight.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And they were like, no. It's. Then I had to call them and let them know that the Democratic congressman who flipped their own district won. And they were like, really? It's like, guys, turn the TV back on. Everything is fine. So in any case, it was still a very close race. Closer than maybe we would like. Sanders still beat Buttigieg by about 4,000 votes. And he edged him out by just over 2 points, so not a huge margin of victory.
Yeah.
Amy Klobuchar was right there in number three and picked
really
up a
was.
Lot of the steam. Actually, a lot of her voters were former Warren voters, it turned out, in exit polls at least. So
that doesn't surprise me at all.
It doesn't surprise me, but it makes me wonder how unprincipled Liz Warren voters are.
Well,
I mean,
God,
if only 10% of Liz Warren voters or 10% of the electorate who are Warren voters are principled people, I'm a little concerned about that.
I know.
But,
well, I think, honestly, it was in large part due to her debate performance.
I agree.
Her debate performance was great. And, like, there was something, I can't remember what the, we don't have all the exit polls in front of us right now. But, like, there was some stat that I thought was wild where it was, like, something like almost 50% of people had said that they made up their mind, like, in the last 3 days.
Yes.
Where, like, in 2016, like, it was, like, 14% of people had made up their mind, like, in the 3 days, like, leading up to the caucus.
Totally.
And, like, that would have been a good sign for her, and clearly it was a good sign for her because she had such a great debate, and that clearly led to a huge surge here because no polls had her polling that well.
No, of course not. That's, I think, actually, this this. So Biden came in at 8.4%. So yeah, Biden was in the place. Single digits. Warren was just under single. Was just into the single digits.
Nobody other than Sanders, Buttigieg, and Klobuchar got any delegates.
Yeah, and Klobuchar got almost 20% of the vote here. So she did really well.
Yeah.
This leads me to revise any previous statements I might have had about. I think this Klobuchar's performance here actually leads me to believe that Liz Warren, who I want to stay in the race as long as possible, should just fucking wait it out. If Warren voters were people that were willing to vote for Amy Klobuchar, then they are not Sanders voters. And that's great news, because that means that we got a bunch of moderate voters to see the appeal of a progressive candidate.
Yep.
Elizabeth Warren is offering something to the race that Sanders is not offering, which is great.
Yep.
So I say, and I say the same thing about Klobuchar. I think the two of them, you know, you're hearing a lot of griping from people that support the two of them, because it's sort of like, why do these female candidates who are highly qualified keep getting sidelined?
Right.
And I agree. That's kind of nuts.
Sure.
And I also agree that I'm helping sideline Warren, because I changed my vote to Sanders after she flubbed my most important issue. But I think that both of them, because of that, should just wait it out. I don't think they should exit the race, even if they're not performing well in these early states.
Yeah.
I think that they should assume that they are offering something to the race by staying in. And I think there's a lot of like DNC wisdom that it's like respectful to exit the race if you're not going to be the definitive winner. But we're headed to brokered convention territory here. So I say the two of them should just stick around.
You had been saying, because I was jumping on the Elizabeth Warren obituary bandwagon like on Tuesday night. And you were like, no, she should stay in. And I was like, this is Lila just digging in her heels.
That's right.
And then actually it was, you and I were talking about this earlier today. It was actually just this afternoon where I sort of revised my feeling on that and acknowledged that you were right yet again, which I didn't like.
So often.
But here we are. because I was listening to the 538 podcast and their election model, which, look, is probably garbage, because what does that model know about anything?
Right.
How can it
that
possibly...
That model had Hillary Clinton winning by 95%.
That model can't plan for Donald Trump. It can't plan for candidates like Bernie Sanders. It can't plan for candidates like Michael Bloomberg, for that matter. And they acknowledge that. I mean, they're not entirely delusional about that. But their model now, for the first time just this last week, moved to having the most likely scenario being that no one gets the majority of the delegates.
Yeah. And if that's the case,
then especially if you're Liz Warren, who just continues to go around getting, you know, third place everywhere she goes, like, why not? Especially when she sort of is now fashioning herself, and I think that she sort of needs to figure out what her message is, because it's been all over the place, which is part of, I think...
Right, leading up to New Hampshire, she was going on about how many Republicans were voting for her, and I was like, step off of that
train. Right, don't be doing that.
Yeah.
But, like, I do think that, like, this sort of... The reason that I have always thought that she was going to be one of the best candidates, besides just liking her, was that she can appeal to sort of everyone. The moderates would stomach her. The left would stomach her, but we would do more than stomach her. Right. I think like she could actually sort of like get people excited. People love her.
High value and, like, voters would be more than excited to have her.
Right.
That's
and I think that if when you're in a race that could potentially get to a brokered convention where nobody has the
majority
of delegates, you might want to be the person who has the best, you know, tale to tell about being the person who is going to appeal to everyone.
Well, I also who is the person that is like sort of in the middle of a Sanders and a Klobuchar candidacy? It's Liz Warren.
Yeah.
She is a strong female candidate who is also progressive, who is not so progressive that she's, you know, trying to completely break down the system.
Yeah.
Who is also not so moderate that she doesn't acknowledge that like some changes need to be made to the system.
Right.
I mean, she is a compromise candidate that everyone can at least vote blue no matter who for.
Right, yes.
And there are some candidates right now in the race that we cannot expect everyone to vote blue no matter who for.
Right.
I think I would contend
mostly because they're not blue.
That's correct. Bren and I are going to talk about this in a little bit, but like, you know, we've been sort of revising our vote blue no matter who tabulations, because with the threat of Bloomberg, we're sort of seeing some of these moderate candidates in a different light, where we're starting to think like, okay, if it came down to it, who sort of broadly represents the same values as us, even if they don't, even if the values they represent have A, led us to the situation that we're in right now, and have B, you know, B, don't actually address our needs.
Yes.
And noting that Bloomberg is so far outside of that frame, we have found ourselves saying, okay, well, We would not like casting a vote for Amy Klobuchar. Right. But I guess we might have to. Like, but I think somebody, but Warren is a candidate that everyone could vote blue no matter who for and and still gripe about and still find something to grab onto. Right. And that, given that, you know, we're in a field right now where, you know, there are no more candidates of color left in the field. So that's a big loss. And hopefully that's something that they can address in a VP pick, whoever the candidate is. There are, you know, there are other gaps in the candidate field that, you know, now that we have sort of like a bunch of senators running for office, basically, that we're not addressing.
Right.
And then one 38-year-old who is not credible to anyone. But among the options of the options that exist, that's a vote blue no matter who candidate that people get behind. So she should not step out of this race, even if she just doesn't have any money and just continues to like languish. Well, and
she does, though, is the thing. Like, her supporters are not quite ready to give up on her. She had just announced the other day that she's raised $6 million since either New Hampshire or Iowa. I can't remember. That's only a couple weeks.
I was ready to donate to her this week, not because I'm going to vote for her, but just because I it's important to me that she stay in the race.
Yeah.
I think that's important to everyone that she stay in the race. And certainly that she have the money to at least try to compete in Super Tuesday big states.
Yeah.
In any case, we're going to talk a little bit about polling in some of the upcoming races and then national polling to give you an idea of where everyone stands.
Right. Sanders is up big in Nevada by all accounts. There's been some polls out recently that have him ahead anywhere between like 7 and 19%, which seems a little crazy.
Right.
But anyway, the Real Queer Politics has... his average is that he's up 9% in Nevada. And that sort of tracks with sort of what everybody is saying. There's an article on Politico I was reading earlier today that was sort of like talking about more broadly the outreach that he has done there and like talking to a lot of like people in the Latino community, like where he first put his office and he has the most staffers and like people are being like, his campaign is the only one that I have heard from. Like, I mean, he really has like put his money where his mouth is on sort of like reaching out to a broader community of people than he did in 2016. Like he definitely learned that lesson. And people who were quoted in this Politico piece who worked for other campaigns, you know, they were on the condition of anonymity, obviously. But were acknowledging that like they're playing for second and third place in Nevada.
And guess who's playing for second and third place along with them?
Tom Steyer.
What a weird world we're living in, you guys.
Right.
What a world.
Yeah. Well, another billionaire.
That's right. Nevada's important, though. It's the first diverse contest, diverse state to have a contest in the primary.
Thing. That's... You know, and that's why I think it sounds like Sanders is going to win, but like, I just wonder how long we can continue to sort of make excuses for why he isn't the front runner. You know, you and I were sort of like talking about this earlier, that to a degree it sort of works in his favor that he's not being considered the front runner, because like once you're sort of the front runner, then, you know, once you have expectations to live up to, when you don't,
then
you can't win. I mean, that's sort of why Elizabeth Warren is sort of like in the doldrums where she is right now, is because everybody's started to look at her as a candidate and then she sort of, she flubbed being the front runner. I mean, because she was the front runner once and she was terrible at it. I mean, I don't love her any. Well, I love her. I do love her a little less, actually.
Yeah, we actually changed our vote because of that.
But I mean, not being considered by the media the front runner is sort of like, well, okay. But also it's just hilarious because it's like he got more votes in Iowa. He got more votes in New Hampshire. And then people are sort of like, well, let's wait until we get to more diverse states.
Yeah.
So we're going to get to Nevada. He's going to win that potentially by more than anybody has won either of the other two states.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to talk about South Carolina next. That's going to be closer than everybody thinks if we're to believe any of these polls, which, again, who knows whether you're supposed to believe polls these days anymore. but, like, if this was a candidate that was literally any other living human on planet Earth.
Unless it was... like Karl Marx.
himself.
Right.
The ghost of
the
Karl
ghost
Marx.
Of Karl Marx.
Right. We would be talking about who Bernie Sanders' vice presidential pick was going to be.
And we would also...
We would also
be leaning on a lot of these other people to drop out.
100%.
And look, I am a firm believer...
Right, let's have a long primary.
Keeping the primary field as deep as we want until as late as we want. I think it's good for turnout. I think it's good for getting people involved and engaged.
Yeah.
I think anyone who is saying to me right now, I just hate how no one's getting along, is being a fool.
The nastiest primary that I have lived through was not the 2016 one.
No.
It was the 2008 one.
That's right.
And that worked out fine.
Exactly. That one we won the general.
Worked out great.
Yeah. Yeah. And keep in mind that a nasty primary is much nastier between two people than it is between five.
Well, true.
So yeah. A collection of people can't train fire on everyone at every moment.
Yeah.
Two people can. Yeah. That's how you get a nasty primary. Yeah. The 2016 primary was pretty nasty.
Yeah, sure.
It was not nasty enough, apparently, for us to... It was so nasty that we didn't win because we didn't figure out a way to kind of like, you know, cohesively sort of support a candidate because it was so nasty. But I feel like a nasty primary between five people is way less of a liability to us than a nasty primary between two.
I agree.
So everyone should stay in, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care.
And the last thing that I'm going to say about that is that there, with Sanders, there has been this... They keep coming up with these weird benchmarks. You know, we sort of talked about let's move on from the white states. Let's get to, you know, more diverse places. Okay, fine. But also, like, the night of the New Hampshire primary, they kept talking about Sanders not getting to 30%. Which seemed to be a thing that they made up that night, from all I could tell, anyway.
I'd never heard anyone mention it before that.
Right, and then the other thing that they keep saying is that Sanders' message is not the one that's winning because the moderates are getting more votes than he is. And I would say to that, then go figure it out.
Right.
I mean, have a moderate convention, invite whoever the fuck you want, and then pick somebody.
Right.
I don't care. But right now, there's five of you. And four of you are moderates, or three of you are, and then one of you is whatever it is that Liz Warren is up to these days.
Right.
And get yourself together. Also, and come up with the candidate that you like. You know, it's hilarious. There was that whole thing where James Carville was really, like, ragging on Bernie Sanders last week, you know? You know what James Carville was doing leading up to the New Hampshire primary? He was campaigning for Michael fucking Bennett.
Right.
So, like, you've got these moderates out there who are like, we need to actually pick somebody who's electable. What the hell are you doing, James Carville? You fucking twit. You're campaigning for Michael Bennett. Got like seven votes.
Yeah.
Like, so these people don't know what the hell they want. They know that they don't want Sanders. But it's like, unless you can figure your life out.
Yeah.
Then, like, Sanders is going to win. And, like, obviously that's my preferred route that we go here. But it's like, you can't complain that the moderates are splitting the vote if you're not going to figure out how to fix it.
This
is how Trump won also, and he became the president.
Yeah.
Lest we forget.
Exactly. Interesting that is like a rallying cry that moderates have used this whole time.
Are they trying to say that we should only allow two people in primaries or something? I don't understand.
That is what they want. And what they're actually saying is that Sanders should drop out. Their message is that Sanders should drop out.
No, totally.
Because I would argue that we don't know anything about what ideological content is winning in this primary because all these voters switched from Liz Warren to Amy Klobuchar. Who knows what message is winning?
I know.
We don't know anything about anything.
No,
we know that Bernie Sanders is on message always.
Right.
So we know that his message is getting to people.
Yeah.
We don't know what the rest of the message is.
Right.
The rest of them are ineffectively messaging. That is why we can't pick a winner. So I would contend that part of the issue is that it's not messaging that's winning right now. It's sort of two tracks where Bernie Sanders' rage is winning on the one hand. His message is consistent. It's been the same the whole time. And it's his rage is what drives you because he is channeling my rage, you know. And then Liz Warren, the reason she lost track of what was going on is in part because she stopped messaging. Amy Klobuchar just started messaging because no one was listening to her before this. Pete Buttigieg's message is entirely devoid of content. So he's not actually proposing a moderate vision. He's proposing words. You know, he doesn't. And I say this as somebody who went to a Pete Buttigieg rally again this weekend because I happened to be in Sacramento. He happened to be having a rally across the street. I happened to go. Me and every person in Sacramento, because you can tell how candidate starved people are in California because everyone was there. People in Sanders shirts were there. Like, everyone just wanted to see anyone. But no, there is no message coming out of his campaign. It's not a moderate message. It's just a message of words, of inspiring phrases.
Yeah.
So we don't know what message is actually winning right now. All we know is that we don't know what's winning.
Yeah.
And that's fine. The primary is the only race where we seek to have an answer before anyone has actually voted.
I know.
There is no other election on earth where we're desperate to know who's going to win before anyone wins. We're desperate to decide, not just know who's going to win. We all wish we knew who was going to win before anything happened.
Sure.
But desperate to take decisive action before anyone has cast a vote. Super Tuesday has not happened yet.
Yeah.
Most people in this country will not have voted until late in March and April. And that's not even all people.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have primaries go until June. There is no reason we don't need to know yet.
Yeah.
And I know that that's frustrating because it's expensive to run these races and we want to coalesce around somebody so that we can start messaging for the general. But one of the benefits of a primary is that we get all the shit out in the open so that we can figure out what Oppo Research is going to do when Trump is the, you know, the candidate we're running against, and we can effectively message against it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, you know, people blamed the Sanders camp for Hillary's loss. Yeah. But I think that was maybe the only valuable thing that we gave her was we let them know. We let her campaign know what the problems were.
Yes.
We let them know where they needed to come find us. And then they categorically refused to come find us there. That was their fault. That was not our fault. We were very clear about where we were.
Totally.
And that is what whoever the winner is needs to know out of this primary. And having this many people in the primary is going to help them do that.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I think that this is actually, as always, I think a big primary is good. I think a contested primary, you know, a highly contested primary is good. And I think we're foolish if we're already trying to know the winner before anyone on earth has voted except for a few white people in the smallest states in the union.
Right.
In any case, moving on to South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina, the RCP polling average here is Biden up 6.5.
His firewall.
And listen, you know, I'm tired of these weird expectations that we're going to place on people for like where I was just talking about, like, you know, Sanders didn't get 30% and the moderates are getting more votes and like this, that, or the other, whatever it is that we're making up the night of. But if we're going to live in that world, which it seems like we live in, I'll live in it for a second and make one up right now, that if Joe Biden wins South Carolina by 6.5%, that is a devastating loss.
He has no firewall.
There is no firewall there. Like they keep talking about the Southern firewall. He's mentioned it a billion times. The night of New Hampshire, he was in South Carolina. He is banking his whole life on it right now at this point.
He was there on New Hampshire night.
Yes, he was giving a speech in South Carolina on the night in New Hampshire because he left earlier in the day. Clinton won South Carolina 74-26.
Yeah, she won by 50 points.
She won by almost 50 points. Yeah. And similarly, throughout the South.
Right.
So she really did have a Southern firewall. It was through those Southern states winning by that much that she was able to run up the delegate count. If Joe Biden wins South Carolina and other Southern states by 6%, he's going to get one or two more delegates than the other people because inevitably somebody else is going to be above 15%. That is not... He can't win that way.
Well, and this is going to be in a world where he's not going to get any delegates in a lot of other states. Hillary Clinton was getting delegates in every state.
That's the thing. Yes, because you have to get 15% or more to get a delegate.
Right.
So he doesn't have, does he have any yet? Did he get any out of Iowa? I can't remember. He didn't out of New Hampshire.
I think he might have just made the threshold in Iowa. Yeah. He didn't in New Hampshire for sure.
Didn't in New Hampshire,
It's not looking like he's going to in Nevada.
No.
And there are plenty of states coming up on Super Tuesday where his polling has really tanked.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, and looking at, you know, there's only one poll out of Arkansas right now, but that's coming up as well, which is why people are starting to care. There's not very many delegates out of Arkansas, but he's not even winning there. He's losing to Bloomberg, which, while I would tell the people of Arkansas to sort of find a better place to look.
A thing I've said many times before.
Also, like, you can't be going around losing in those states either if you're Joe Biden.
No.
So, like, there is no way that he, post Super Tuesday, he's going to be in at best second in the delegate count.
Yeah.
And that is...
It's not enough delegates.
If he has good days everywhere. That's not winning.
No.
Despite our new narrative where second place is the winner in some of these states.
Right.
But anyway, so, you know, that is not... If you hear Claire McCaskill or Chris Matthews on MSNBC... telling you to just wait for the Southern firewall, chuck something at your television.
Also, if you hear
also
Chris
change the channel.
I was going to say, if you hear Chris Matthews on your TV at any point.
Right, you've done it wrong.
Change the channel. Do anything else.
Right.
Watch Fox. It doesn't even matter.
You got there errantly.
Yeah, exactly. You basically made a mistake. Things have not gone the way you planned, and it's time to move on.
Yeah, move on.
Meanwhile, one more note about South Carolina. Guess who's polling third?
Steyer again.
You guys, these billionaires... are billionaires. They are not politicians. They are oligarchs.
Yeah.
Even Tom Steyer, who is a great philanthropist, and we met him, very nice guy.
Lovely.
You know, has promoted a lot of great projects here in California.
Yeah.
He is just a benevolent oligarch. He's not an oligarch.
Right.
So don't have this many people be voting for him.
Yeah.
Use your heads.
Yeah.
I mean,
use your heads.
Come on.
Yeah.
in Texas, right. We have finally have some polling.
Right. There's only one poll out of Texas since Iowa, right. Since actual voting began. And Bernie is up again, in another Texas. State that Biden can't go around losing.
This is outrageous, you guys. This is a huge delegate haul. It's one of the California and Texas are the big Super Tuesday delegate hauls.
Right.
You, as a person on Super Tuesday, want to be winning one of these states if you think that you are planning right. to if become you're winning the president. Both,
this is another reason why I'm like, after Super Tuesday, there is not, I don't foresee a world in, I think some weird shit would have to go down for after Super Tuesday, Bernie Sanders to not have the most delegates.
Yeah, and I think the weird shit would not be any of these candidates. It would be Michael Bloomberg involved. It Probably. Would be money. It would not be votes. It would. I mean, I know that polling and, you know, money buys votes.
Sure.
FYI. We learned that in New York during the third term of Michael Bloomberg.
We're seeing that right now.
Right. Yeah. But it would have to be some kind of catastrophic money event.
Yeah.
That would, you know, unless Bernie Sanders, like, drops dead.
Yeah.
By the way, side note, before Bloomberg is peppering this entire podcast because Bloomberg, some polling came out this week that showed him just surging in national polls, and we are livid.
Yeah, we're going to get there.
But I just want to be clear about one thing that I'm going to mention again when we get to Bloomberg. Michael Bloomberg is 78 years old.
Yes, I texted you and
Grant. If anyone's going to drop dead, it's not necessarily Sanders or Biden.
Right. I said, I was like, was I supposed to know that he was 78?
No,
I wasn't supposed to know.
There's not a lot you were supposed to know about him because, well, because there is a lot that he has specifically been trying to hide from the people of non-New York.
Right, yeah. One of those polls that we referenced was he, besides the national ones, there was a poll in Florida this week where he was ahead 27 to 26, and it was Biden that was 26. Nobody else even
Florida
close.
Florida is such a train wreck.
Though, right?
Oh, I mean, it's just a bunch classic of Florida. Yeah, that's classic Florida.
Yeah.
Also, that's what a train wreck of a state anyway. I know. I mean, they do this wrong almost every time.
Right?
They literally never get it right over there.
No.
It's so disappointing.
I know.
Because it's all these ex-New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And they're all down there together. But they're just the kind of people who make terrible choices. And then on top of that, like, every other group of people in Florida is either disenfranchised or terrible. Like, there's just nothing great going on there. In North Carolina, you still have a slight Biden margin, but it is closing.
Yeah.
He's only ahead by 4 points.
Yeah, he's
Bloomberg's
been ahead there.
In third there, too.
Yeah.
Bloomberg has been spending big in these southern states, by the way, you guys.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it without anyone saying anything because no one was paying attention because he's not in the debates. He's not in any, you know, he's not in the discussion. Yeah. Nationwide, though, we have Sanders in at leading on average by 4.4 points.
Yes.
That's the RCP average.
Yeah, there's a new poll that came out on either Tuesday or Wednesday that had him up by 10. Nationwide, which was sort of like a wowzer moment.
Well, I think, honestly, the panic of these Bloomberg polls, the sort of the rising specter of Bloomberg is also a rising specter of how everything he's told us is coming true. Like, if you are a person who's unhappy that Michael Bloomberg is polling this well, then you are a person who should consider voting for Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Because he, and maybe Liz Warren to some extent, are the two that have been warning us that this is what this monetary system that we're in, this monetary policy that we have right now gets us, is undemocratic bullshit.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, before we go on more about Bloomberg, let's talk about Nevada.
Oh, man.
You guys. Nevada looks like it could be as much of a mess as Iowa.
Yeah.
It turns out caucuses are a bad idea.
In an even more hilarious way, potentially.
Yeah.
Because, like, that app was always a bad idea. Look, we get it.
Yeah.
Nevada was going to use it, too. At least they got to see Iowa screw it up. But their solution, like, without an app, is potentially more ridiculous than having an app.
Yeah. It's a Google form. Access through an iPad.
A private Google form link that they've downloaded on iPads that they bought for all the caucus sites, which nobody knows how to use.
So they're going to at least be affirmatively relying on two methods of vote reporting, which is something Iowa thought, we'll just have this app. If there's an issue, people can call us. But if not, we're just going to use this app. In Nevada, they're going to be asked to both report via a technology they can't use and also via the telephone.
Right, a private, phone.
Which is a technology they have used and therefore might be familiar with. So we're hoping that at least one of these sources will get the correct result.
Right.
But so basically, every precinct chair is going to be given an iPad that was purchased by the party. It's going to have a link to this Google form, the caucus calculator.
Mm-hmm.
And then preloaded on the form is going to be the early vote totals from that right. precinct. There's already drama.
But nobody knows.
No one knows who's putting these totals on.
Who's loading the early right. vote totals?
How and where this information is getting transferred. So that is already a problem. Also, half of the... There's been a lot of volunteers getting interviewed in various media saying they didn't even know early voting was going on.
Jesus.
So that's another problem.
Yeah.
So
Harry Reid did.
Harry Reid did because he voted uncommitted.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
See, there we go. That's the moderates not knowing what
exactly.
the hell they want. Yeah.
Then the precinct chair is going to put all of the totals into the first and second round. It works sort of like Iowa. You need 15% to be viable. Then once the first and second alignments are completed, they're going to be relayed via the cloud to the party headquarters via the Google form. And at the back end, that's going to be a Google spreadsheet. Now, they claim this is going to go swimmingly because they normally use an Excel spreadsheet. I feel like all of these are like resume points that we used in like 1998 to describe our skills, but that you should not have to say that we're going to be able to use the Google form, the Google yeah. spreadsheet, because we know how to use Excel.
Yeah.
You should assume everyone does, but you yeah. can't in a caucus situation.
Yeah.
In any case, the precinct chair is also going to call in the results to their private hotline, and then someone's going to compare them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if the Google form isn't accessible, they're just going to call them in. Yeah. I predict 80% of the results are just going to be called in.
Which, like, fine. Great.
Well, and one of the reasons I predict this is because they are going to rely on Wi-Fi situations that they haven't quite figured out in order to get these results in. They claim that all of their iPads are going to be equipped with 4G cellular service, but that means that they're going to have purchased 2,000 iPad, like, cellular plans.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like they're going to actually do it.
Also, as it turns out, Nevada is the desert.
That's right. Some of these places don't have great Wi-Fi options.
Right, Wi-Fi or
4G.
Or cellular options.
Right. Some of these yeah. places are going to be having to call from landlines in order to tell you what the results are. And those are places that they just haven't worried about
right.
in the new plans.
Yeah.
There's also training woes because since they came to this plan so late because it was all based on Iowa,
mm-hmm.
half of the caucus volunteers have not been trained in this new quote-unquote technology.
Sure.
And too many of them are not familiar with it in yeah. the first place.
And how are those iPads themselves going to be secure also? Because, like, if it's only
nothing
a secure Google
sounds
link,
secure.
Like, how the caucus chair, like, are they going to, is it going to be their fingerprint that gets it in? Do they all have separate
Brent,
like, passcodes?
Let me tell you something important about this. This is not going to report secure results. So don't ask questions like that. <That's>, let me just be clear with you right now that these results are not going to be secure. And that is part of the fun of the Nevada caucus.
Yeah.
Also, a bunch of panicked emails started going out this week in California asking for volunteers experienced with iPads to come be present at caucus sites, quote-unquote technical volunteers, that they're going to quote-unquote pair with precinct chairs on caucus day, which is basically, they sent this call out initially on Twitter and then it started circulating around California, which is basically like them asking for millennials to come and monitor what's going on.
Right.
And at the early caucus sites, no one had any training with any of the technology, and it was like a catastrophe. It took like hours for them to transmit the results. So they already have early voting going on. It started on Saturday. It's going to continue through the end of the day. It started on Saturday, and it's going to continue until tomorrow. And then we have to figure out what to do with those results because we still don't know. And then on top of that, there's also just an issue with knowing the rules in the first place because the caucus handbook does not give a super clear answer to the question that we saw posited many times at our own caucus
site
in Iowa, which is, can a candidate become viable in the second round?
Yes.
The answer is yes in both Nevada and Iowa. If your candidate does not meet the viability threshold of 15% in the first alignment, they can become viable in the second alignment. But they give two examples in the handbook that give you opposite answers to that question. So in any case, the manual tells us nothing. The rules are unclear. We already saw, and the manual in Iowa was not unclear, but we saw some confusion break out over that in the first place. So this all sounds like it's going swimmingly.
Yikes, guys.
We have one more debate before that Nevada caucus, too.
Yeah, we do. It's only, so far, the
it's
only
on
people
Wednesday.
Who have qualified are Sanders, Buttigieg, Biden, Klobuchar, and Warren. But Bloomberg only needs one more national poll.
He's going to get it.
So he'll probably get
they
it.
They say he's going to show
right,
up.
Somebody, his spokesperson claimed that he would do it because I think there's been some people wondering, like, well, why bother?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, like, and to a degree,
I get it.
If I were,
if I could buy
him,
myself the campaign,
right, if I was advising him, I might be like, is it worth showing up?
Well, as Brent pointed out earlier, the one issue with him showing up is everyone might find out what his voice sounds like.
Yeah, it's whiny.
It's whiny. It's all. It's not a voice that it's not the voice of a leader.
Yeah.
Or the voice of a nice person. It's the voice of a whiny person.
Yeah. Which brings us
to the topic du jour.
Right.
Let's talk about Bloomberg, you guys.
I was talking to a friend of mine this week who was the one who said, I don't even know what his voice sounds like. And I said, well, when you get home, you could watch the clip of him speaking at the 2004 Republican convention, speaking in favor of the Iraq war vote. And he looked at me, and this is a person who is generally knows what's going on in the world. And he looked at me like I had like five heads.
Yeah.
Like I was an alien come here from God knows where.
That's right.
And I was like, yes. I was like, oh my God, please, when you get home, take to the internet.
No, at least
for
this.
For God's sake. Right. At minimum, know that happened. But that sort of like brings us
to a larger conversation.
To a larger conversation about Michael Bloomberg.
I have a first point I want to make before we dive in. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through some of the points on his record that his ads might not be sharing with you.
Yes.
And then we're going to talk about what we think about all of it.
Yeah.
But the first thing I want to say is I think for a long time there has been a bipartisan effort to discredit New Yorkers when it comes to topics like who should be the president.
Sure.
I think there is a sense that we are not real Americans, that we don't really get what's going on in the rest of the country.
We get that here in California also.
Anyone in LA can relate to that. Anyone in NorCal can relate to that.
Yep.
A lot of the time, people in big cities get told that they're not really real Americans. They don't really get what's going on in the rest of the country.
Yeah.
New Yorkers tried to warn you about Trump, though. New Yorkers knew. We knew, and we were on fire about it. And we tried to tell you, and you didn't listen. So let us tell you about Michael Bloomberg. New York Twitter is once again on fire, and that is because the only people who can truly recall 12 years of the horror show that was Michael Bloomberg are people who lived through it.
Yeah.
And what often happens in a situation like this, and this is something that really kind of became clear during his during his term as mayor, the sort of upper middle class media elite liked him for certain reasons. Those reasons had a lot to do with him privatizing access to public spaces that privileged them.
Sure.
It had a lot to do with the fact that, you know, he often would make sort of authoritarian lifestyle policies that benefited them. I mean, I have said to many people, I can only say one nice thing about Michael Bloomberg, and it's that in his overreach of demanding that everyone stop smoking, I started being able to go to restaurants again.
Right.
And I appreciate that he did that because to me that changed my life. But it is... It was also conducted in a thoroughly autocratic manner,
right.
The same way that he tried to ban us from buying large sodas.
Sodas.
So, you know, take it from people who were regular people who lived in Michael Bloomberg's New York. And most importantly, take it from your friends of color who lived in Michael Bloomberg's New York.
Sure.
Because I certainly never walked down the street in Michael Bloomberg's New York worrying about being stopped and frisked.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people who did.
Yep.
And so the first thing that I say before we begin is if you are a person who is worried about children in cages and you think we have to defeat Trump because of children in cages, then you cannot vote for Michael Bloomberg.
Yes.
Michael Bloomberg put children in New York City in cages.
Yeah.
And with that, let's take a look at his record.
Let's do it.
First of all, Michael Bloomberg's company, Bloomberg LLC, or Incorporated, or Media, or whatever it is, the many facets of Bloomberg, has been hit with nearly 40 discrimination and harassment suits from 64 employees who contend that he cultivated a boys' club atmosphere from the top down. So if you are thinking that Michael Bloomberg is your answer to Trump's misogyny, you are wrong.
Yeah. Well, and there was a whole article about this that I read, actually, too, because, like,
there's a few articles about this.
His book, which he gave to employees, mysteriously, at his nonprofit, too, not even Bloomberg, the Bloomberg on Bloomberg book that he wrote, is just chock full of, like, terrible things that he has said about women and sort of, like, how he's done radio interviews where he talks about, like, loving being single and in New York and rich because he can go on the prowl. And, like, I mean, like, he's a disgusting human being.
And that's probably the least famous horrible fact about him, which is why I said it first, because let's now revisit Bloomberg the politician.
Sure.
That's how most of us have met him.
Yes.
Michael Bloomberg was the Republican mayor of New York City, if you have forgotten. If you are a person who is saying Bernie Sanders, because he was not always a Democrat, can't run as a Democrat, then let me remind you that Michael Bloomberg was not a Democrat until 2018.
Right, and Bernie Sanders has always caucused with Democrats.
Has always caucused with Democrats. He initially ran as a Democrat. We literally tried to, like, push him out of a race for Senate, which is why he became an independent. Yeah. The Democrats fucked him over. But in any case, Bloomberg did not change his party affiliation back to Democrat until 2018, just after he hosted a fundraiser for Peter King, the Republican congressman from New York. So let just know that he is a person who was a Republican mayor of New York. And as Republican mayor of New York, he invited the GOP to host their Republican National Convention in 2004 in New York City.
Yep.
I remember that convention very well.
Sure.
Because this was only a few years after 9/11.
Why they wanted to have it there.
That's why they wanted to have it there. They used us for all the symbolism they could get.
Totally.
And they did it by mass arresting those of us in the street protesting outside. Bloomberg opposed union contracts. He was very antagonistic towards unions in the city. He opposed a lot of public spending increases, but he gave huge giveaways to corporations while he was the mayor. He also opposed minimum wage increases at the time. And you are going to hear now that he is in favor of them, but I would say don't trust that information. Oh, Michael Bloomberg has historically been very antagonistic to anything that benefits poor working people.
Obviously.
So don't worry about that. He, at that RNC convention, was a featured speaker. He endorsed George W. Bush. As Brent said, he endorsed the war in Iraq. And he's also spent tons of money on Republican candidates, including Scott Brown
over Elizabeth Warren. Yeah.
But he also, he's given money to Lindsey Graham. He gave money to Pat Toomey, he was one of those last, you know, he won by a very slight margin.
Yeah.
He was one of the people that gave Mitch McConnell his majority that he has right now. But he's also held fundraisers for plenty of local Republicans like Peter King. And as I said, it was not until 2018 that he switched back to being a Democrat. And that's because he was thinking of running for president.
Yep.
But he's spent since 2012 more than $17 million on Republican races. He's personally donated $950,000 to Republican campaigns and PACs. In the state of New York, he's given $4.6 million to the New York State GOP committees, to various New York State GOP committees, and $300,000 to Republican state and local candidates. And he has a track record of doing all of this for personal gain. He also supported the state Republican Party in New York when he decided to go for to change his party affiliation from independent to from Republican to independent so that they wouldn't try to primary him. And so he basically paid off the Republican Party so that he could basically remain a Republican as an independent.
Yeah.
But his rule in New York was like a reign of terror in neighborhoods where that had a lot of people of color. The stop and frisk policy that he claims he inherited and eliminated, you know, diminished by 95% was actually a policy that he expanded, and he was really unapologetic about it because
hear him just years ago. I mean, not that long ago. I mean, that was one of the pieces of video that got sort of put out into the world this week where everybody was sort of like, oh God, wait a minute.
Yeah. And one of those video clips, he said, oh, but I said that like 5 years ago.
Right.
When he was 73 instead of 78.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Uh-huh.
But he has doubled down repeatedly on the need for stop and frisk to get weapons out of the hands of minorities.
Yes.
And if you are a person, by the way, who is thinking, oh, Bloomberg is great, because he's given money to gun control.
Right.
Just know that he is in favor of gun control the way that white people became in favor of gun control.
Right. Ronald Reagan was very much in favor of gun control when he was the governor of California. And it was because the Black Panthers started going around with guns.
That's right. If you are wondering how gun control started as a concept, it started because the Black Panthers were arming themselves.
Yes.
And that is why Michael Bloomberg, a latter-day white supremacist, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
It became concerned with gun control. Yeah. He became concerned with gun control because he's trying to get guns out of the hands of minorities specifically.
Yes.
Not everyone in general. So his gun control policy, it might be great that he's giving lots of money to gun control organizations, but it is not stemming from an honest place. So don't think that that's what you're doing by supporting him, is supporting good gun control policy.
Yeah, do better, Lucy McBath.
His administration was also Islamophobic. He spied on Muslims who had committed no crime using the NYPD under his tenure as mayor. And Trump has praised this repeatedly. Yep. You might not be surprised to hear. And there were other civil rights violations. As I said, the RNC convention in 2004 saw the lockup of thousands of innocent people for the crime of preparing to exercise their free speech rights and also accidentally being on a street corner at the wrong time. The city had to pay those protesters $18 million for violating their civil rights. Like, they had to settle with the protesters and pay $18 million. And then the same thing happened with Occupy Wall Street. He violently cracked down on Occupy Wall Street. The city also had to settle a lawsuit with them because they pepper sprayed them and were otherwise much more violent than necessary. And he's got the same foreign investment issues as Trump. So we're talking about a guy who has tons of foreign investments, a guy who is heavily invested in China, a guy who, because of that, first of all, he hasn't said he's going to disinvest from any of these things.
No.
He runs a media empire on top of that.
And
these are all
And it turns out
conflicts.
You don't have to.
Right.
I mean, we've decided that you don't have to. So
exactly.
There would be no reason for him to do so.
Right. These are all conflicts that he has not gone through any lengths to figure out how to address.
Yeah.
And most importantly, he stole his third term as mayor.
Right.
I have been calling it his illegal third term as mayor because I want to be clear that we have term limits in New York City that he got, that he specifically overrode because he wanted to stay the mayor. It was easy when he was a billionaire because he outspent his opponent in that race 50 to 1.
Yeah.
And to be clear, Giuliani also tried to claim that he deserved a third term the year of 9/11. And he didn't get to. So this is not something we're just handing out willy-nilly in New York City.
Right. Bloomberg's, it was money.
Bloomberg's idea was, oh, well, the 2008 financial crash means we're in an emergency, so I have to be the mayor again.
Yeah.
But he was not in favor of any retribution for any of the players that caused the financial crash, which is why he wanted to stay the mayor. But he also, at that time, enacted the sort of, it wasn't the beginning of this behavior, but it was certainly the most egregious use of it, where he started paying people off. He started paying off nonprofits by giving them huge investments. He started paying off other, you know, he started paying off members of Congress. He started paying off all of the payoffs that he is now calling in started around that time. And it was because at the time in New York City, he was paying off anyone who'd be critical of him taking a third term. Yeah. Suddenly, all of these nonprofits and pastors and all of these people started supporting it. And it was because they were taking money.
Right. And we're seeing that now also with a lot of his endorsements. There was there have been multiple articles written about all of the endorsements that she's getting because he's getting them from a lot of mayors. And I think on its face, people think that that's just because, like, oh, he's a mayor of a big city, and it's like mayors should be out there and mayors can do it.
Right.
But, like, what is actually happening is that, A, they have all gone through, like, his mayor's training program, which is also sort of like, okay, fine, whatever, like, do that, I guess, you know. But, like, also, you know, as an example, the mayor of Oakland, California, who probably would not otherwise be supporting him, like, one of Bloomberg's nonprofits gave the city, like, $500,000 to, like, spend on education or something. So they're like, you know, and again, I'm not saying that those are bad things.
Well,
like,
I am saying philanthropy that has this kind of political aim
that
is a bad thing.
Yes. I mean, I agree on that front also. But, like, that's where he's getting a lot of the support. I mean, it's to say, obviously, you know, I just referenced Lucy McBath. I said, do better, Lucy McBath. Yeah. But, like, obviously,
she got money.
She got money. And, like, also, she sort of champions gun control. And she thinks that Bloomberg is doing the same thing. But, like, I'm certain that, like, you know, every town for gun control or whatever his thing is, like, I'm sure gave her a ton of money and advertised on her behalf.
He gave her something like $2 million in her race. There is a direct, it's not even a hidden financial trail to these candidates.
Right.
The candidates and the politicians that are coming out to support him now have all directly received like millions of dollars from him or his charities.
Yeah.
So there's a clear pipeline. It's in plain view. It's not even hidden. You can guarantee that anyone who comes out in support of Michael Bloomberg has been paid.
Yeah.
In some respect.
Sure.
So anytime you hear someone supporting him, just know to yourself that that person didn't come to that decision because they felt that he was the best person for the job.
Right.
They came to that decision because of money.
Right. And he has endless amounts of it.
And that also goes, you know, he's able to hire more campaign staffers. He's able to pay them more. He's able to give them more job security. He's able to give them all sorts of swag and food and all sorts of stuff.
Yep.
He's paying Instagram influencers to advertise for him. I mean,
and they don't have to report that as
They don't have to report that as advertising. Yeah. And so we're talking about someone who is actively buying the race. And if you are someone who doesn't care about kids in cages, but wants to tell me that the real reason we need to defeat Trump is because he is putting, you know, he is destroying democracy as we know it, then tell me how Bloomberg is doing anything different. Because this is anti-democratic behavior. This is oligarchic behavior.
Right.
If he is enabled to buy this race, then we have not, we no longer have a democracy. We have an oligarchy.
Yes, correct.
And so just, if you are someone who is including him in your vote blue no matter who tabulations, and as much as that's never been my philosophy, I certainly understand why people are so panicked that they're thinking that way already.
Yeah.
He cannot be one of the people that you will vote blue no matter who for.
Right.
We have to decide there is a line somewhere, and that line has to be when an oligarch tries to buy us, because we are not Democrats if an oligarch is buying us.
Right.
Our party doesn't exist anymore.
Oligarch is a Republican.
Well, especially when that oligarch is a Republican. But I mean, like, our party does not exist anymore as we know it if Michael Bloomberg is our standard bearer.
I have been telling that to anyone who will listen to me, because I've had multiple conversations with people about Michael Bloomberg this week, and like I don't think that people actually are really this was sort of like one of the things that I have just like come to the realization of this week, and I don't think I'm being overdramatic here when I say that if we end up nominating Michael Bloomberg as the candidate in this election, it will have repercussions that will reverberate through the party for elections and potentially decades to come. Mm-hmm. Like, I think...
Well, we don't have a party anymore.
We don't have a party any longer. And I don't... And, like, that sounds sort of like, you know, sort of like end times-y sort of talk. But I actually do believe that. I'm not trying to be bombastic. Like, no. I think that there is a very, very large portion of the party, like a fifth of it potentially, who will feel like that if he is the candidate that they don't belong to this party any longer. Like, this is, and I am certainly one of those people. Like, this is not like, and you know, we mentioned this earlier in the podcast, it has also been sort of like making me feel like I could tolerate some of these other people. Like, you know? that's where I sort of like got to the point where I was just sort of like, wait, you know, I don't agree much with Amy Klobuchar, sort of like when you really dig into what anything. Her policies are. Right. Pete Buttigieg doesn't have any that I can tell, so like you can't agree or disagree with him.
Right.
He's running as like a bot, basically.
Right.
As like far a computer. As I can tell. He's running as a computer, yeah. but like, and I might also sort of like not, I might also think that Amy Klobuchar comes from the sort of like neoliberal portion of our party who sort of has, at least in my estimation, gotten us to sort of the mess that the whole country is in right now by not sort of like, you know, being able to see what's going on. Sort of,
well, and like, being contributing to it and actively helping
and contributing to it.
Cause
but
it.
I can also like the having Bloomberg in the race also sort of like has given me the ability to also acknowledge that like broadly, she sort of wants the same things that I want.
But I was going to say, in a two-party like, system, I'm in the same party as her. In a three-party system, I'm not.
I'm not, right. But we live in a two-party system right now, which, you know, I don't like either, but that's a discussion for another day.
Right.
But in a two-party system, I am not, and a lot of people aren't in Michael Bloomberg's party. And that's what
Michael Bloomberg is in his party.
And I think people will ultimately learn this as we learn about him. I think right now his surge is due to the fact that he doesn't exist outside of a television commercial for anyone.
Yeah. No one's heard his voice in any of those television commercials.
No one's heard his voice in any of those.
That's been very lucky for him.
But I just want everyone to acknowledge that, and I think the candidates are sort of starting to do this, and it's going to help Bernie Sanders if it's going to help anybody.
Yeah.
But like, we have a common enemy in this primary. And up until now, people have been pretending like it's Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Bernie Sanders is not our common enemy in this primary. It's Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah.
And like, in a world where you're going around saying, like you said, vote blue no matter who, but you won't vote for Bernie Sanders and you will vote for Michael Bloomberg, then like, I'm out.
Right. I'm not in the same party as you anymore.
I'm done. And I'm done for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done until that gets corrected.
Yeah. Well, I am probably done forever, and I'm just hoping that a new large party forms
would. And I think that would be, you know, that I think for legislative reasons, that would probably for a little while be a bummer.
Yeah.
Because I think whatever that new party is, and the Democrats would probably lose a lot of elections moving forward. At a certain point, you have to sort of face yourself. And like, if we belong to a party where Bernie Sanders is a bigger boogeyman than Michael Bloomberg, then like, you know, I'm almost...
We don't belong to that party.
I'm almost hoping that it comes down to those two, because it seems like it could.
It really could.
And I think it's important for us to have that conversation. I'm scared that it won't end up like I want it to, but it's also like, I want to know the answer.
This is also where I think the Democrats have trapped themselves, because one of the things that Bloomberg has been doing is he has been calling his rich donor friends and saying, you don't have to donate to me, but don't donate to anyone. If you are a candidate who is in need of rich person money, then you are a candidate that is liable to lose money in this Bloomberg scenario.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders is the only candidate, maybe with the exception of Liz Warren, who has outside funding in that it's regular people.
Right.
So Bernie Sanders is the only person who doesn't lose any money on Bloomberg running.
Right.
And that is a situation that the moderates got themselves into. I'm not sorry for them, because that was their idiotic behavior that landed them there. They are people who, like, oftentimes, like Republicans, are very scared all of the time. And so because of their fear, they're always ready to compromise, you know, affirmatively. They're always ready to compromise first and ask questions later. And if that That is where that thinking lands you. It lands you in a place where Michael Bloomberg can take away all of your funding.
Yeah.
By not even needing money.
Right.
You know? So I think the reason that we maybe have to fear that a Bloomberg-Sanders showdown is the end result of this is because Bernie Sanders is the only candidate that doesn't stand to lose anything over his run.
Right. Well, there was already, to your point, I was just reading something the other day that, you know, obviously the next person who has the most rich donors is Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I mean, followed closely by Pete Buttigieg. But those donors are already leaving Biden and they're going to Bloomberg.
Right.
So, I mean, Bloomberg doesn't need that money. But also, like, in a world where these rich donors are scared that Joe Biden might not be it, like, well, even if they don't write Bloomberg a check, which they might not because he doesn't need it, if they're supporting him and not writing Joe Biden a check or not writing Pete Buttigieg a check, then that becomes a problem for them because they don't have, like you said, human beings who are giving them money.
Right. No, exactly. And I think that is a situation, that is the argument for having candidates like Warren and Sanders stay in the race a little longer, too.
I
mean, Sanders obviously isn't exiting the race, but Warren and Sanders are the only two people who are actually able to fund their runs without losing a zillion dollars to donors. As a final note on Michael Bloomberg, I just want to point out that if you are thinking to yourself, well, I have to vote out Trump because he's making money off of being the president, then
Bloomberg
I leave
a fuck
you
ton of money as the mayor.
With the fact that Michael Bloomberg, who is an actual billionaire, unlike Trump, who is pretending to be one, I'm pretty sure, made over $25 billion while taking no money, but taking no salary as the mayor of New York City.
Yeah.
No one knows how. That money just came to him. That is what you get when you allow an oligarch to write the laws to his suiting.
Yep.
So don't, if you have literally any argument that you have about Donald Trump, I know that it's convenient to say, well, anything is better than Trump. But anything is not actually better than Trump. And anything might be the same as Trump in different, bad in different ways. I mean, you know, you have to remember Michael Bloomberg is actually competent. So Donald Trump bungles most of what he's up to. Half of what he's wanted to accomplish, he hasn't been able to because he's lazy.
Yeah.
Michael Bloomberg is ruthlessly efficient. He has more money than God. He doesn't answer to anyone. He's an asshole. And he's investigating his opponents at the moment, like investigating people like, you know, prominent journalists and other people who have been speaking out against him.
Yeah.
He is a person who can actually accomplish what Donald Trump has not been able to accomplish. So it is not actually better to elect anyone over Donald Trump. We should aim to elect someone at least marginally better.
Right.
And I think, you know, when you're voting for someone, you are casting an affirmative vote for someone, whether you like it or not. You have to be able to look yourself in the mirror the next day. I take that responsibility very seriously, as I think you know. Brent takes that responsibility very seriously. I don't regret any of my past votes, even when they haven't been popular. And that's because I know that I did what I needed to do to look at myself in the mirror the next day. I would not be able to look at myself in the mirror the next day if I voted for Michael Bloomberg. So I will not do that.
Yep.
Like, I think if you are a person who thinks that Donald Trump is a scourge, then you are a person who inherently
who should be
has to think
someone in the primary other than Michael Bloomberg.
Yes. And you also cannot say, you should not at this point in the primary be saying, but you'll have to vote blue no matter who.
Right.
That's a discussion for a later day.
Yes.
Do not validate his candidacy by suggesting that you would vote for him if it came to it.
Yeah.
Don't even say it. Don't give him that legitimacy. Say that he is not acceptable to you and tell your friends he is not acceptable to you and vote for literally anybody else.
Yeah.
That's my screed on Michael Bloomberg. Don't let him be the president, you guys. He is such an asshole. In other news.
Other New York mayor news.
Other New York mayor news.
Fact,
yeah, we have
the current one.
The current one, Bill de Blasio.
Made an endorsement.
That's right.
And it wasn't Michael Bloomberg.
Surprise.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the media elite were the only people that liked Bloomberg. The
Shocker.
Media elite are the only people that hate Bill de Blasio.
He has a company of media elites.
Right, exactly. De Blasio's constituency is everyone besides people that liked Michael Bloomberg. He's not that popular as the media would tell you because they hate him. But de Blasio is funny because he somehow has managed to harness the power of everyone outside of the people who liked Michael Bloomberg within the Democratic Party. I mean, we're talking still within the Democratic Party. Bloomberg was beloved by the elites and everyone else found him reprehensible.
Yeah.
De Blasio has the exact opposite problem where you hear constantly negative news about him in part because the media elite hate him.
Yeah.
And everyone else is at best ambivalent about him, but doesn't hate him with the same kind of rabid passion.
Yeah.
And he's somehow been the mayor twice over that. So New York's an interesting place.
Yeah.
You guys should visit.
Yeah.
In any case, he endorsed Bernie Sanders this week.
Sure did. And he had, that's not nothing. He endorsed Hillary Clinton in
2016. He owes his early political career to the Clintons. So that was actually, I mean, it's not surprising that he wouldn't endorse Bloomberg, but I do feel like part of the reason that he was so hedgy and weird during the 2016 race is because he knew he was going to have to endorse Clinton and was not super thrilled about it. Right. But the Clintons are kind of a political mob, especially in New York. You have to kiss the ring with them a lot of the time. He owed a lot of his early support to them, and so he had to do it. And this time, he finally came out as a progressive.
To. Yeah.
Which he is.
Which he is, right.
Exactly. Sanders also early on the anti-Bloomberg train.
Yeah, really the first one to sort of like, I mean, they had been asked about it at that debate before New Hampshire, just because.
And Warren has been sort of referencing it without saying Bloomberg.
Right, exactly, right. But Sanders really just came out at this, Democratic, some DNC fundraiser, shindig, dinner, whatever.
Yeah, one of those dinners in Nevada.
And just really went in on him. You should watch the clip. It's just a couple minutes. He sort of, I think, ended his prepared remarks about how Bloomberg is just sort of like not the candidate who is going to be able to put together a coalition to and also create the amount of excitement and energy that is going to be needed to defeat Donald Trump. I think that he is going to sort of continue to sharpen those attacks. It was great to see him sort of like come after him. I don't know that it was sort of like the most coherent argument against Bloomberg.
I feel like everyone's been real blindsided by this sudden rise.
That's what I was going to say. I think part of it was the first time that he had done it, and it sort of, you know, I was glad that he did because I was like, yes, I am here for this. It also felt like it maybe needs workshopped a little bit.
Everyone's going to have to workshop their Bloomberg attacks.
That's okay.
Hopefully by Wednesday, everyone has come with their A game.
Right, exactly.
Because, and I don't know what Tom Steyer is going to do in this new arrangement.
I know.
He's the big loser here because, I mean, we have never advocated voting for Tom Steyer because you also shouldn't vote for even a small-time billionaire. Right. That is also an oligarch. As he can be a benevolent oligarch, like we said, but he's still an oligarch.
Yes.
But this is really making him look much more sinister than I think he wanted.
Yeah.
Especially as someone who wants to be able to just be like, but everyone's so wonderful.
No.
And everyone's going to have to be like, except you and Michael Bloomberg.
Right.
That's not wonderfulness. Right.
Because all of the candidates on the stage will like pounce on him for spending so much money to trying to buy the election.
I mean,
and he has spent more than Steyer, but like Steyer can't be like
Steyer is polling in double digits in half of the South. By doing what? Who's his constituency? You don't see any evidence of that here. It's because he's buying them.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, so he doesn't really have that talking point, unfortunately.
No. Meanwhile, speaking of Steyer and Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg.
Yes.
An embarrassing thing happened.
To two of them.
To two of them. And to one of them, somehow, the fact that an embarrassing thing didn't happen has made me angrier than it should. Telemundo was doing televised interviews with a couple of the presidential candidates.
Yes.
And asked them if they could name the president of Mexico.
Yeah.
It might shock you to learn that only Pete Buttigieg could. That means that Amy Klobuchar, who's a sitting senator, and Tom Steyer, who's a random person, so I wouldn't necessarily expect him to know anything.
Yeah.
But Amy Klobuchar literally could not name the president of Mexico.
And Steyer said that he forgot. Buttigieg obviously knew the answer. Now, look, I am not here to tell you that this is disqualifying.
No.
You know, I don't think that it makes Amy Klobuchar less prepared to be president. But it also is surprising that you would go to an interview with Telemundo and have not known the answer to that.
To the president of Mexico.
Right? Like, even if you weren't expecting to be pop quizzed about it, like, even for yourself to be able to reference it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, we've got a new trade deal with them. We've got, you know, obviously they were talking about immigrant issues.
They're a border state.
Right, exactly. Like, it's just odd to me, especially for Klobuchar. Like, look, what's Tom Steyer doing? It's like you said. I mean,
what would he know about anything?
He only exists in TV commercials and on the edge of a debate stage, you know, like
in a Christmas tie.
In a Christmas tie. Right. So like, whatever. Like, he doesn't know the president of Mexico. He doesn't have to. What the hell does he care?
Right.
If he's not a real candidate.
Right.
I mean, even though some people are treating him as such, they shouldn't be.
Right.
And he won't win. So like, whatever.
Whatever.
anyway, but like Amy Klobuchar, like,
she's a senator.
Right. And also seems like a person who, in a similar way, but not quite as an annoying way as Pete Buttigieg, also probably just was the overprepared, like, smart kid in class.
Yes.
Right? Don't you picture her as, like, the always had her hand up?
Yes.
Right? Like, ready for a pop quiz at any moment? So it's weird to me
that she didn't prepare
that she just didn't for a Telemundo interview
by knowing who the president of Mexico was.
Yeah. Anyway, so do better, both of you. Also, yeah, whatever. I mean, She's probably not going to be the president either. Let's
face it. That's true. Why prepare if you're not going to be the president either? Why bother? But if she is the president,
yeah,
I feel like one thing that she should try to do is when she's giving interviews to Spanish language TV stations,
yeah,
is to learn basic things about Spanish speaking countries.
Yeah.
Just in general, an idea. Yeah. If you are giving an interview to the Slovakian national TV network,
right.
Certainly, yeah. Find out about what's going on in their government.
Age old, you know, piece of advice.
That's right.
Know your audience.
Know your audience. Exactly.
Oh boy, Rush Limbaugh,
Presidential Medal of Freedom. Or freedom winner.
Yes, or whatever. Who knows what it is?
It's not anything anymore. Right. So
whoever the next president is should revoke it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Can you revoke those?
Can you do that?
They should.
Anyway. Had some words for Pete Buttigieg this week. He said, despite all the great progress and despite all the great wokeness and despite all the great ground that's been covered, America's still not ready to elect a gay guy kissing his husband on the debate stage president. They all have to be saying that, don't they? Talking about Democrats, they all have to be saying that.
I don't think they do have to be saying that.
No, they don't have to be saying that.
No one at all has to be saying that.
In a recent Gallup poll, more than 3 in 4 Americans, 78%, said that they would be willing to vote for a gay or lesbian person if they were a party's, quote, well-qualified candidate for president, which seems like it should...
That's what disqualifies. That's
what's disqualifying.
Right.
Yeah. Right. The well-qualified. It's not the gayness.
No.
It's the well-qualified.
These gays you want. If you're not qualified, that's a separate problem.
Yeah. It's fine. Right. Yeah. We're telling people in our district to vote for a drag queen.
That's right.
In the upcoming election, exactly. By the way.
And by the way, in the West Hollywood Silver Lake district, that's not disqualifying.
Certainly not.
You know?
No.
But what is disqualifying is being a moderate Republican.
She's also well qualified.
Exactly. Right. She serves in local government.
Yeah.
Being qualified is really the only qualification.
Yeah.
Or being at least vaguely qualified in according to criteria that is about policy and knowing the job.
Yeah.
Is really the only reason that you would need to consider. Or the only basis you would need to consider a president on, except unless apparently you're Rush Limbaugh. Yeah.
So the other candidates all came out in support of Buttigieg, said that Liz Warren said that it was hateful and offensive. Joe Biden said something minorly offensive. Probably told a story about the first time that he saw two men kissing in 1912, with his
dad. And how shocked and horrified he was, but now he's okay with it.
Always grew up knowing that being gay was the right, you know, a fine thing to do, even though, like, obviously, like,
that's
that was never
true.
A thing that happened. Anyway, but Buttigieg himself responded to it. And, like, you know, look, we all know that I don't like the guy. So I'm going to parse everything that this asshole says. I'm also gay, so I get to.
That's right.
He said, well, I love my husband. I'm faithful to my husband.
What?
We'll read the whole thing and then we'll come back. We'll pick it apart later. Well, I love my husband. I'm faithful to my husband. On stage, we usually just go for a hug. But I love him very much, and I'm not going to take lectures on family values from the likes of Rush Limbaugh.
Then take them on from us.
Right.
Take them.
First off, from I'm us. Faithful to my husband.
Don't
You're cheating,
say that.
Right.
He's
is that, right?
I mean, that's, is that why like would
a,
you say that?
Was, that was a public
admission of cheating. Why would you bother saying that?
Who says that?
That's what. That's like the worst lie. That's the worst version of lying. You don't. You don't add more information than you need to. If you add too many details, it sounds like you're lying.
Yeah. Number two.
Just kiss your husband.
And I mean that in all seriousness.
Yeah.
You are a gay man.
That's right.
You are running for president. Yeah. We live in a world where it is now legal to be a person who is married.
We live in a world where we have to watch a lot of people go in for disgusting kisses with their straight husbands or straight wives. It is never fun to watch candidates kiss, and yet everyone else is doing it.
Gay it up.
Kiss them on TV. Kiss him in front of crowds. Kiss him wherever.
Ugh,
God. I sort of get the feeling that they don't engage in any sort of intimacy.
I was going to say.
They're like the chastest.
Kiss in public. Also, maybe try kissing in private.
Practice first.
I don't trust that they've done that either.
No,
I agree.
Know.
Yeah.
I was actually reading an article, and it was from earlier this year, but it was picking apart, and it was from some gay blog, like sort of like gay academic blog or something like that. But it was about the Time cover that they did. And it was about people sort of using the power of sort of cis white maleness to project imagery that projects power. So, you know, they say, like, in the same way that oftentimes, like, people will try to harness either the appearance or the voice or something of this sort of idea of what power is supposed to look like as a way of harnessing that power.
Yeah.
And people can do, you know, people can harness whatever version of it they're able to. Obviously, as a woman, you can't harness being a man, but you can certainly harness wearing a powerful suit and projecting your voice and, you know, being authoritative or whatever. But it's sort of like this image of them sort of like with their arm around each other, almost like they just met in front of like a white picket fence, like, you know, in front of like a Midwestern looking house and a yard. And it's sort of like projecting this image of like 1950s domesticity that is meant to kind of harness the power of like straight white America without actually including it. The article is called something like, straightness without women or something like that. It's something about how basically they managed to like to use all the symbolic power that comes along with that sort of 50s white picket fence imagery and just like not have a woman in the picture. Right. But like everything else is like meant to harness that symbolic power.
Yeah.
And it was kind of an interesting read because it was not something that I had thought about. And it's, you know, to some degree, something I think he's doing intentionally because he knows he's the first high profile gay candidate and he's trying to sort of be like, I'm just like you. And so we just do what you do. But it is interesting to think about the ways in which his attempts to harness this sort of like straight domesticity has like really rubbed a lot of the gay community the wrong way.
And
I think in a fair way, because it's not really representing what, you know, the sort of battle to, you know, be allowed to marry and the battle to be a part of public life was about, which is allowing people to do that, you know, even with whatever lifestyle they're actually leading.
Well, and that has been a lot of what the gay community's issue with him has been, because, and this is a problem that a lot of people speak of when we talk about sort of like, you know, what the likes of HRC is up to, sort of like, you know, I mean, we've been able to sort of like,
you guys know, we don't, you know, we get up to shenanigans, right? We get mad at HRC.
You know, this idea that sort of like, well, now we got gay marriage, and so like now we're done,
right?
And nobody actually thinks that, but like, there's this sort of idea where it's like, you know, we did this thing where we sort of like got the one thing that we like wanted to do that actually just sort of like is a thing that sort of like
conventionalizes us,
which is sort of like, fine, I get that. Right. Like, it's important. I'm not saying it's not, but like sort of like understanding the, you know, he sort of like really doesn't seem to process like his gayness and how that sort of like has intersectionality with so many other issues in America. I mean, he really sort of like seems to not be able to process that. And that is his whiteness. That is his maleness. Mm-hmm. That is, it is all of his, all of the things that sort of like give him privilege to sort of like not see sort of like the plight of all people and, and certainly sort of like gay people who sort of exist outside of white gayness.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think that, because it's been sort of interesting to listen to moderate friends tell me about how great a step forward this is for the gay community.
Sure.
And then for me to have to be like, but do you know any of the gay community or any part, have you heard any, like, what, who are you talking to about this? Because it's sort of in a similar, there is a way to, you know, there is a way to sort of like fight for gay rights in a way that basically allows white gay men to become full white gay men in the privileged sense.
Right.
And then there's a way to sort of see it as part of a large intersectional struggle that has intersections with gender and race, has intersections with poverty, has intersections with everything, which is what it is. And and is coming and is stemming out of a tradition of groups more like ACT UP that were much more radical about how they approached gay liberation, as they might have called it, or whatever the terminology of the day that you're operating in is.
Yeah.
But it's been interesting to see like the kind of symbolism he's been harnessing has been the kind of symbolism that I feel like actually excludes many people that are straight too.
Yes,
you know, like it sort of excludes a lot even white straight people. It excludes anyone who's not living in a really conventional bubble, and sort of intentionally so.
Yeah.
So Rush Limbaugh can go fuck himself because this guy's representing more family values than I would want
represented. I mean, we just spent the last 5 minutes talking about how terrible Pete Buttigieg is, but Rush Limbaugh is the worst kind of person on this earth, and he's soon to be dead. And I think that we should all feel great about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck you him. Know? Fuck him.
Like, die already.
Die already. Yeah.
Jesus.
Sometimes you're just a bad person, and we don't have to care about you.
Yeah. That's right. And we don't.
And we don't. So. Good riddance.
Lastly,
you guys.
I mean, I don't even know how this is lastly. We, I think it was just because
we buried about, this story because we wanted to shit on Mike Bloomberg, basically.
Right, that's what it was. Yeah.
But this is probably the most important story of the week.
Probably. Sorry. Yeah. The Department of Justice is just working at the behest of the president.
That's right. Now, we basically, it's like gutted.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, the day of the New Hampshire primary, intentionally so,
100% intentionally
we
so.
Basically had a Saturday night massacre where everyone resigned.
Yeah. The federal prosecutors who were working on the Roger Stone case put out their suggestion for how long that he should be sentenced for.
Right.
And they said that he should serve 7 to 9 years. Donald Trump immediately takes to Twitter. Yeah. And he said, this is a horrible and very unfair situation. Mm. The real crimes were on the other side, as nothing happens to them. Cannot allow this miscarriage of justice.
Ooh, miscarriage of justice.
And these were federal prosecutors. Yes. Like, these were prosecutors who worked for the Department of Justice.
Right.
So, the next day, I believe, or maybe it was that same day. I can't remember the total order of events. Anyway, right after that Trump tweet, the DOJ backed away from the sentence recommendation for Stone.
Mm-hmm.
In a matter of hours. And then, in a matter of hours after that, all four of those federal prosecutors
quit.
They left.
One of them left the Department of Justice
entirely.
Part of the
DOJ entirely.
Which is like, none of this. This is all happening as the results are coming in for New Hampshire,
right.
So everyone was not paying attention.
Yeah.
But it was basically the most significant event in the Department of Justice under Trump's tenure so far.
Yes, for sure.
And then the next day...
Basically, they're meddling in an ongoing criminal investigation.
Yeah. Which... in some ways, is the definition of a miscarriage of justice, which is funny because that's what Trump claimed was happening.
I know.
And he's right.
His
miscarriage of justice comment actually caused a miscarriage of justice.
Yeah.
Which is an irony that I'm sure he doesn't understand.
Yes.
So the Democrats called for an investigation because obviously the executive, you know.
Yeah, you can't be doing
branch
this.
Is
right, the
DOJ meddling into
is
its
not
own
Trump's
meddling
like
into
an
DOJ
arm
affairs.
Of the presidency. Right.
Right. And then the next day, Trump tweeted, "Congratulations to Attorney General Bill Barr for taking charge of a case that was totally out of control and perhaps should not have even been brought."
Perhaps should not have even been brought.
And then Barr got interviewed and said that the president's tweets were making it impossible for him to do his job.
Yeah.
And he also, I think, agreed to testify.
Yeah, he did. But I have a feeling that when Bill Barr says it's making it impossible for him to do his job, what he means is that... it's putting out into public.
It's revealing how he's doing his job.
It just means that he wishes Trump would not say the quiet part out loud.
Yes.
That's all he means. He doesn't mean that he wishes Trump would stop doing the things that he is doing.
No.
He wishes that Trump would stop saying the things that the two of them have agreed should go unsaid.
Right. Would stop announcing their strategy to everyone.
Right. That's what he means.
And that's unfortunate.
He doesn't mean that he's sorry or
you shouldn't pick a co-conspirator who can't keep his mouth shut if that's your plan.
Right.
Bill Barr had been given plenty of warning about this by Twitter, by the press,
by living in the world. Being alive.
It's something we would have known if we were collaborating with Trump on something.
Right.
It's something that as a person who's a human being with ears and eyes, he was empowered to know and somehow has not fully understood that his own part in accepting that would be the case. But in any case, he said that the president has never asked me to do anything in a criminal case, which is hilarious. And then Trump reacted, by the way. No, this is even better. Trump reacted in a tweet as well. Saying that he has the legal right to intervene in criminal cases.
Sure.
Including Stone's.
What we've learned, and this is what I think Democrats were worried about, and even Republicans to a certain degree, is that he now can do whatever he wants.
We showed him that we're not going to do anything about
it. In whatever respect that he wants. Mm-hmm. Which was why everybody who was talking about impeachment was talking about precedent.
Yeah.
Have we just decided that everything that the president is doing is okay, and we now officially have decided that everything the president is doing is okay.
Don't elect Mike Bloomberg under these circumstances with these precedents.
Yeah.
You guys, be careful.
Right.
But in any case, the Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee said on Wednesday that Barr is going to testify on March 31st.
Great.
We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah.
They said that he's going to be questioned about the, quote, misuse of our criminal justice system for political purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then Barr also appointed an outside prosecutor to review the criminal case against Michael Flynn, because he's awaiting sentencing, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, because
But now they want to withdraw his guilty plea because nothing matters anymore.
Right. Yeah. Flynn is saying that he wants to withdraw that because they're claiming, he and his legal team is claiming that the FBI and federal prosecutors engaged in misconduct.
Yeah. Miscarriages of justice abound, you guys. Oh, my God. So in any case, the DOJ is not an independent arm of anything anymore.
No.
Or even a credible arm of anything anymore. Because I guess, I mean, nothing in the government is fully independent. But usually things are just
The Department of Justice is not supposed to be working behalf of the president.
Usually people are trying.
Right.
That's all. That's what we've stopped doing right now is trying.
Yes.
It's the end of trying as we know it. In any case, let's review. Don't even say out loud that you would be willing in a faraway universe to vote for Michael Bloomberg.
Yep.
That's some advice from us to you. Don't will this into existence by saying it. I'm not a woo-woo person who thinks that if you say things out loud, you manifest them or whatever.
Right.
But in politics, you often can manifest ideas by just having them.
Sure.
Politics is people can catch your ideas in politics.
Right.
You know, people can catch your ideas socially. So don't say out in front of people. If you want to say it in private, do you. But if you are in front of a human being, do not say out loud, I would vote for Michael Bloomberg if it came to it. Say out loud, Michael Bloomberg, as Charles Blow said in his, he's gone wild. Every day his op-ed column is just about how much he hates Michael Bloomberg these days. And he's right to say that. Because every day you should say to yourself, Michael Bloomberg must not be our candidate. That is the only appropriate thing to say to yourself about Michael Bloomberg.
And tell everybody.
Tell everyone.
Tell your friends. Tell strangers.
Tell Republicans. Tell Democrats. Anyone you want. Children. Adults. House pets.
Dogs.
Right. Yeah. Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
But just get that into your head.
Right.
So that you never find yourself.
And into the world. Because I am a woo-woo person.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
I have used The Secret before.
Yeah.
I don't know if it worked, but I tried it.
I can tell you it didn't.
Right. And Marianne Williamson is still my third choice for president.
That's right.
So that's woo-woo it up.
Whatever you need to do, don't give another person the justification to say themselves, I would vote for Michael Bloomberg if it came to it.
Yeah.
Have them say to themselves, Michael Bloomberg must never be our candidate.
That's it. That's what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll talk to you next week. And
follow
us.
Nevada.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter because we will be there on the ground keeping an eye on the situation. Right. Talk to you next week.
Bye.